This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. In this portion of the program, an exploration of contemporary Christian music. It's quite popular, outselling jazz and classical music. We'll take a closer look at the music, the people who make it, and its impact on the people who are listening to it. And we'll ask, what does contemporary Christian music tell us about contemporary Christianity? Our guest is an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Columbus, Jay Howard. He is also a former Christian radio disc jockey. Together with John Streck, Jay Howard has written a book about contemporary Christian music. Its title, Apostles of Rock, The Splintered World of Contemporary Christian Music. As we talk, your questions and comments are welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, our number, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line, good wherever you're listening. Toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Jay Howard, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Celeste. It's a pleasure to join you and the WILL listeners.
Let's try and grapple first with, you know, what is it that makes contemporary Christian music contemporary Christian music? In the book, you say it's best thought of in terms of community. You want to take it from there?
Well, that's a big question. We spent 200 pages
right,
not fully answering that question, but I'll take a shot at it, okay, Celeste?
Sure.
We use a notion that a sociologist by the name of Howard Becker developed called art worlds, and we think that the best way to think of contemporary Christian music is as one would think of any other sort of artistic product. It is the result of the people whose collaborative efforts produce this particular artistic product, in our case, contemporary Christian music, and that involves the activities of, in our case, the musicians themselves, the producers of that music, the record companies who are the owners who make the music itself, the distributors who sell the music, the audience who buys and listens to the music, and also the critics who help provide the rationales that justify the existence of this particular music. So it's the cooperative activities of all of those five groups of people together that create the genre that's known as contemporary Christian music.
Mm. And can we talk a little bit about maybe what topics, what themes contemporary Christian music grapples with?
Well, that's, again, another very wide-open question, and it depends upon which particular subset of bands and artists that you're talking about in contemporary Christian music. There are some who define their music as a ministry and tend to take a very gospel-oriented sort of approach, something similar to what you'd find in more traditional forms of gospel music. So there are themes of the need for salvation or the presence and comfort of God in times of struggle or even sort of spiritual lessons to encourage the believer. Another group see contemporary Christian music more as a form of sort of positive pop or a wholesome entertainment alternative. And in that case, a CCM artist could be singing about virtually any topic as long as it's not anti-Christian, that Christians get married and fall in love and have money problems just like the rest of us, and therefore all those topics are fair game. And then there's another group that views CCM more as art rather than as ministry or as entertainment. And like most good artists, they tend to struggle with the tension between the good and the bad or the hopeful and the despair. And it's at that sort of nexus that they tend to focus and produce music that's not nearly so hopeful and happy as the other two subgenres do.
Hmm. Now, these subgenres and the artists and the industry producers and all the folks that make up the community, because of these subgenres, there's got to be a good amount of discussion going on, and there must be some conflict going on between the folks in these various subgenres.
Oh, absolutely. There's a whole lot of debate over what a pop culture researcher would call the issue of authenticity, of what is authentic contemporary Christian music and what is not. And basically everybody feels like, well, what I do is authentic contemporary Christian music, and what you do that's different from what I do, well, that's not quite authentic contemporary Christian music. It's a debate that parallels what goes on in the wider rock and pop music realm as to, you know, we tend to think, you know, Bruce Springsteen is authentic rock music, but Madonna is not. So we get a similar sort of debate going on in CCM, but along different lines about what makes the music authentically contemporary Christian and what doesn't.
Mm. And this conflict within the church or within the Christian community that listens to this music, is this conflict detrimental or is it beneficial?
Both, I would say. Very often it's not terribly productive conflict. Sometimes it can even degenerate into name-calling or sarcasm that isn't especially helpful. At other times, it can be very profitable if people stop and take a step back and say, what are we doing? Why are we doing what we're choosing to do? And is this really achieving the goals we want it to achieve? So there are instances where it can be very helpful if it's framed in a productive sort of manner. But if it's merely a matter of sort of dismissing other people as not being authentically CCM, then it sort of degenerates just to name-calling.
Yeah. Well, who's listening to this music?
Well, lots of people, judging by the sales. We're looking at a huge amount of money being spent on contemporary Christian music every year. It's like according to the Recording Industry Association of America, it's like the sixth best-selling genre of music. It's ahead of jazz, it's ahead of classical, and it's market share has been increasing steadily over the last decade. So much so that mainstream record companies are looking to buy up CCM labels or develop their own labels because they see there's a lot of money to be made here. And CCM also has something of a split along racial lines. There are more traditional black gospel groups that do cross over and sell to a CCM audience, but the CCM audience is largely a white audience. And if we include black gospel into that group, then we get more racial diversity. But in general, as is in the case of lots of forms of popular music, there's a racial divide there.
Yeah. You say that for the most part, CCM or contemporary Christian music listeners are educated, middle to upper middle class, white, dedicated Christians. How old are they?
I'd say the target audience, and again, it's going to depend upon the band, but the target audience probably runs from 15 to 50, so we've got a pretty wide range there depending upon the style of the music, but I think most of the sales are going to people under age 35.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting to read your little story about the kids who are at a Christian rock concert, and they're in a mosh pit. Maybe you'd share that with listeners.
Okay, I was at the Ixus Festival, which is a CCM festival that occurs at Asbury College and Seminary in Wilmore, Kentucky, just outside of Lexington. It's an annual festival that goes on every year, over 25 years or so now, 30 years, I guess, because it was created the year after the Woodstock Festival as sort of a Christian response to Woodstock, trying to present a more hopeful message, I guess, maybe, and has been going on every year ever since. And it draws largely Methodist Church youth group, young people, 15,000 plus every year now. And the year I was there, this is, I don't remember the exact year, it's been 4 or 5 years ago now, a mosh pit had formed with one of the alternative rock bands, And I was kind of standing on the fringe observing what was going on. And it was a very friendly mosh pit as far as mosh pits go. I mean, there weren't a lot of bloody noses or broken arms or anything. And people being fairly nice, using their arms to bounce off each other rather than trying to hurt one another, as sometimes happens in a mosh pit. And I noticed a couple of young people, early high school, maybe late junior high, on the edges of the mosh pit and smiling and enjoying themselves. And as I was watching them, another mosher came out of the pit with a bloody nose. He must have caught somebody's elbow or shoulder or something. And he came over and stood beside me trying to get his nose to stop bleeding, and I handed him some tissues, as did another person near me. And in the process, he notices that he lost his wallet somewhere along the way. So he's frantically looking on the ground, and all at once, in the middle of the mosh pit, a hand goes up holding this brown wallet. And it was this young man's wallet. So he worked his way back over, and the wallet was returned to him, making it one of the most friendly mosh pits that I've ever witnessed. So.
Yeah, yeah. And the music at this particular festival, you said this festival started as an alternative kind of thing to Woodstock. Here we've got that idea of a wholesome alternative, positive pop or positive rock, if you will. What kind of music was playing in the particular festival that you went to?
Well, because it is a festival, they'll have lots of different bands with lots of different styles.
Mm-hmm.
The band with the mosh pit was a group that's called The Choir that plays an alternative rock with lots of feedback loops and distorted guitars and very sort of poetic, obscure sorts of lyrics. And at the ICFUS Festival, that sort of band doesn't get the real positive response. The type of band that gets the very strong crowd reaction is one that is much more overt about their faith, that uses a lot of religious-sounding words and jargon. Sometimes in the industry, they joke about JPMs. That stands for Jesus's per minute, and that's one of the ways in which some people measure authenticity of CCM. If you say Jesus often enough, well, then you're authentic CCM. And it's at a group that appeals, or at a festival that appeals primarily to people who are high school age and below, you get a lot of that sort of sloganeering that they do respond to.
Mm. So at this particular festival, the ministry subgenre is the biggest
draw. Right, is the dominant
draw. Yeah.
Right, and I think that's often part of the criteria when the festival organizers go about selecting bands to play at ICFUS. They're looking to say, okay, who do we perceive as being real music ministers that are going to come and somehow minister to the youth groups that we're bringing in from throughout a 4 or 5 state region?
Yeah. I think this would be a good point to play some of the music.
Sure.
You sent along to us some examples of the subgenres of contemporary Christian music. And why don't we talk about or listen to an example of this the type of ministerial, if you will, subgenre, a subgenre that you and your co-author actually refer to as separational CCM. This is Rebecca St. James. You want to tell us about her and what we're going to hear?
Okay. Rebecca St. James is a very popular female artist, obviously. Rebecca is very much in that separational genre. When you listen to the song, I think we're going to play God, which is the title cut from an album that's now a couple of years old. But listen to the very overt references to very religious-sounding music. So despite the fact that, you know, the music sounds like you could hear it on any radio station in terms of the musical style, when you listen to the lyrics, you'll hear a very overt religious sort of message. And that's the type of thing that you typically find in a separational minister form of CCM.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rebecca St. James, a tune called God from the album God on the Forefront label. One of the interesting things about this particular performer, and maybe it's true of other performers in this particular subgenre of contemporary Christian music, is that she leaves the stage right after she's finished because she believes that the praise belongs to God, the applause and any kind of, you know, adulation belongs to God, not to her.
That's correct. You'll find that frequently in CCM. There's often a tension between how, as a performer, the audience does come to see you perform, and they come because of your musical or vocal talents. And yet the artist often wants to deflect that praise, that recognition, that adulation to God rather than themselves. So it's one of those ironies that you have this competition, in essence. You know, who are people coming to see and adore, the performer or God? So you get into debates about, is selling T-shirts, at least, 20 years ago when CCM was starting, it was a big issue. I mean, could a band sell T-shirts with their name on them, or was that promoting idolatry? Well, I think the genre has gotten over that bit of trivial debate and decided, no, it's really not a big deal. If somebody likes the band, it's okay that they wear the T-shirt and it's not turning the performer into an idol. But that tension remains there, and it's a good example of how the religious elements of CCM introduce all sorts of conflicts and tension that more mainstream artists don't have to deal with.
Yeah, stardom and riches are things that are kind of a tricky wicket, sticky wicket for these folks. Or
absolutely,
are they? I mean, let's think about the subgenres that we've been talking about here. Does it get a little easier? Those questions, do they get a little easier if you're into the wholesome pop or the wholesome CCM, CCM as an alternative or as art?
Right. I think it does get easier. I think particularly for those from that positive pop approach, which John and I label the integrational subgenre, that they see less of a conflict, and it's okay to enjoy yourselves. It's okay to use talents which God has given you, and by using those talents, they are not stealing praise that's due to God, but are giving God praise by using the talents that He's placed within them. So there's less of that concern about idolatry or star worship or stargazing in the forms of CCM that view themselves more as being a wholesome entertainment or as being an artistic product rather than being a ministry.
Mm. In the world of the ministry music in contemporary Christian music, what is the purpose of the music?
Well, I think clearly the purpose for them is to, number one, their ultimate goal is to convert people, to convince people who are not now Christians to become Christians, or people who are Christians but are lax in their faith, that haven't been tremendously influenced by a decision they made previously in their life, to become more active in their faith, to take their faith more seriously. But there's a problem in that when you become very religious sounding in your lyrics, is that you narrow the market of people who will listen to you. So you end up performing only in churches or at Christian colleges, and you end up recording for a Christian record label, and your CDs are only sold in Christian bookstores, and so you end up preaching to the choir, trying to convert people who've already been converted. So it's one of the problems that the separational approach, those that see themselves as ministers, have to deal with is the fact that there aren't a whole lot of unconverted people listening to them for them to convert. So one response has been to say, well, our purpose isn't just to convert people. Our purpose is also to praise and worship God. And currently, there's a big emphasis on worship music of all sorts in contemporary Christian music. So you can have a heavy metal band doing praise music in a heavy metal style, or you can have a ska band doing praise music. A whole lot of that going on. And I think that that is one response to the fact that people are waking up to the reality of the matter that there aren't a whole lot of unconverted people listening to separational CCM.
Yeah. Well, also, I would think that for Christians, keeping on the path has got to be, once the conversion happens, to stay on that path has to be important. And I would think that that's where this kind of ministry would be important.
You're absolutely right, Celeste. And that's the third major rationale for separational CCM. There's the conversion or proselytizing approach, first of all, the worship and praise music approach, second, and you got to the third one before I did. The issue of sort of exhorting believers, encouraging them in their faith. And that, as you say, is one of the major missions that these separational ministers see themselves having. But there's also some tensions when you're trying to do that within the confines of a 3.5-minute pop song, that sometimes you end up writing very trite sorts of music, because by the time you get to the third verse, everything has to be tied up in a nice pretty bow, and there's a happily ever after sort of story. So sometimes separational CCM ends up writing fairly trite music because of that, right? Very formulaic music. That's a good word.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is Jay Howard. He's co-author with John Streck of Apostles of Rock, The Splintered World of Contemporary Christian Music. My name is Celeste Quinn. If you'd like to talk with us this afternoon, if you've got questions or comments, give us a call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And we have a caller waiting to talk with us on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hello. Hi. I wonder if you could talk a bit about major artists crossing over, you know, occasionally producing a gospel album. I mean, it doesn't seem like it really happens much anymore. You know, it used to be, you know, a prime example would be somebody like Elvis Presley. You know, he would put out these devotional albums. And I don't know if anybody's really doing it anymore. I mean, does Garth do it or something, you know, is there anybody who's sort of breaking out of their own mold, and you know, or is it just an occasional song or something?
It tends to happen more with sort of the country pop artist rather than rock artist.
Yeah.
Leanne Rimes is a good example. As a matter of fact, her album, You Light Up My Life, you might remember that Debbie Boone song. She recorded that, and the title of her album was You Light Up My Life. And in 1998, that album was officially classified by the Recording Industry of America as CCM music rather than country music, and it was the best-selling CCM album in 1998. So you do see some occasional crossovers like that, but they tend to come more from sort of the country pop realm.
Yeah, it seems like most pop artists or R&B artists aren't really willing to make that, get out of their kind of slot, you know, just to do that.
And I think it's more acceptable for the R&B, the African-American performers. You know, I can see Whitney Houston recording and having a very popular CCM album, but I don't see a lot of pure, straight-ahead rockers doing that.
It just seems like if the major artists did it, they would just blow everybody else out of the water anyway. You know, it's almost like maybe the record companies don't necessarily want it, you know.
Well, I think the record companies want to do whatever makes money.
Right.
So that's their primary motivation. And if, you know, some major label thinks they've got an artist who can, you know, generate a platinum album by, you know, recording CCM songs, I think they would encourage the artist to do that. But of course, you've got to worry a bit about alienating another segment of
that
artist audience. So it's a tricky business. It's very hard to predict in the recorded music industry what albums are going to make a profit, and the vast majority of them don't. It's something like one out of 18 albums turns a profit, and you know, one out of, I don't know, 35 or 40 is makes a tremendous amount of money that pays for the cost of all the others. So it's a real gamble in the recorded music industry.
Well, actually, is that percentage better for the CCMs? I mean, since they're already going to a targeted audience?
No, CCM has the same sorts of problems. It's not an exact science of predicting which albums people are going to respond to. And so therefore, just like in pop music, you get a whole lot of copycats. When the band Jars of Clay, which started off on a CCM label, had a crossover hit with a song called Flood, all at once, it seemed like every new CCM band was doing this acoustic guitar-based rock sounding like Jars of Clay. So just like the mainstream industry, CCM tends to take sort of a copycat approach. Well, if this style is working, we need to go out and find a band who does that style of music.
Oh, I'll get off here, but maybe talk a little bit about the growth of the radio, too. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of stations now around.
Yeah, there are a lot of CCM stations, and it is they do exist, and there are a lot of them, but they tend not to draw a very large audience. And my personal view on that is they shoot at way too broad of a demographic group. That because they are targeting Christians in general rather than, you know, 18 to 35 year old males, they tend to try to appeal to such a broad demographic group that they end up not appealing to anybody and tend to have very, very small market shares as a result. Now, they're able to get away with that and still be financially profitable because they sell time to various ministry organizations who do sermons on the air or broadcast a church service or something, and they can still be profitable without having a very large listener audience. So most of the time, CCM radio has not made the kind of inroads in the radio markets that you would expect them to based on the sales of CCM.
Mm. What's your opinion of the CCM cable video channel?
It's not available in my area, so I haven't watched it. Uh-huh. I've seen like half-hour weekend programs, and but I really can't comment on it. It's called Z Music,
right?
But since it's not available here, I haven't seen enough of it to have any sort of informed opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's available here, but I guess I'm the wrong demographic for music video television. So I have watched a little bit of it, but not very much. Let's go and talk with another caller.
Okay.
Line 4, a caller in Eureka. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm kind of curious as to what you define as Christian. I suppose you could say if you listen to TBN and some of their things in music, or Pat Robertson, or you listen to other things, I suppose you could say Johann Sebastian Bach wrote Christian music, Charles Wesley and some of the great hymnals.
Sure.
I just wonder, is it a kind of conversionistic, evangelical, fundamentalistic approach, or what do you mean by Christian and Christian music?
That's
okay,
a great
well,
question.
For starters, it's contemporary Christian. So in general, when you're talking about contemporary Christian music, you'd leave Wesley and Bach and others like that out of the the equation. But the Christian part is where the big debate is, and why there is so much infighting within the genre, why there's so much introspection within the genre, as it is dominated by evangelical fundamentalists, and sometimes that sort of becomes the measuring rod. And if bands don't sound fundamentalist enough or evangelical enough, then they become suspect in the eyes of the industry. And so then they start doing things like, you know, the Jesus is per minute count on the latest CD as well. Okay, how many times did they include the word God or the word Jesus or overtly religious phrases? And then it becomes the debate over authenticity. And I see my job as a sociologist and John as a media theorist as not to tell them as to what's the right answer or wrong answer, but rather to explore the various answers that are offered and to try to clarify those answers, make them more obvious, and then spell out the ramifications of those answers. So how's that for an evasive response?
Well, I can understand. It's sometimes when you're dealing with a vast area, who is it that did Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, a kind of documentary in evangelicalism, I realize it's much broader than the media, the reports one gets over media, meaning plural, newspapers, radio, magazines, television, the Internet. But May I ask one more question?
Sure.
I have seen sociologists, there's somebody at the University of Virginia and other people that have done the electronic church. I realize they're not the same, but is this group of people shrinking or growing or staying about the same as you study them?
Which group of people are you referring to?
The kind of Christian music you're talking about. For example, some people say among evangelical churches there's not that much growth. It's just kind of a shell game. It's just people moving from one to the other. But
well, I think if you look at the demographics, you're going to find that it is the evangelical churches that are growing.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of sociologists named Finke and Stark, Roger Finke and Rodney Stark, wrote a book a few years ago called The Churching of America, where they looked at growth rates of denominations from 1776 through 1990. And what Finke and Stark discovered is there has been a long-term pattern of, and they set this up as sort of an economic model and say which denominations have the biggest market share. And there's been a continual climb in terms of increasing market share, capturing the percentage of people who are going to church among the evangelical denominations and Baptist in particular. And we find the more mainline denominations, those that evangelicals would characterize as being too liberal in their eyes, on a steady decline for 200 years. So I think the evidence is very strong that it's the evangelical fundamentalist churches that are growing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes individual churches grow because some evangelicals are leaving other evangelical churches and going to this particular one that, you know, has a very engaging pastor or a great music program or something. And your argument makes sense in the case of individual churches. You have to be careful about that.
Yeah, that's
when it comes to capturing market share, in using again that economic analogy, it is the evangelical fundamentalist groups that are growing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. And we have another caller waiting for us on line two in Bloomington. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It seems to me that the very term Christian rock and roll is an oxymoron. The beat is still there, and who can understand the lyrics anyway? It seems to me that a few years ago, Christians were condemning that beat as being almost from the devil, music from the devil. And now all of a sudden, by adding words that most people can't understand anyway, it becomes Christian. That's a kind of a mystery to me.
Okay, well, you're hitting on the two major sort of objections that were present in the origins of contemporary Christian music. One is an aesthetic sort of objection that says, you know, rock and roll is a inferior musical form. It's clearly not as good as classical or whatever a person's favorite style happens to be, and therefore argues this music is unworthy of carrying a gospel message because it's inferior aesthetically. The other is more of a moral argument that says there's something about the music that is inherently evil, and it's satanic, it's of the devil, you play it backwards and you get, you know, secret backward mask messages. The responses to that are that, for starters, all musical styles are a matter of taste, and what you listen to and understand is a matter of what you're familiar with and what you like. I don't think you'll find many 15 to 39-year-olds agreeing that, you know, this music is ununderstandable. They'll find it very understandable. Also, the argument that, you know, this is heathen jungle music, as was sometimes phrased, tend to be rooted in rather racist assumptions about drums, that, you know, this is, you know, black Africa music. And when you begin to investigate where the slaves came from in Africa, you find out that in those parts of Africa, the common musical instruments were something that was closer to a guitar or a lyre rather than drums in those parts of Africa. But those arguments have largely lost the battle in CCM. I don't think you're going to find many people who are convinced either by the argument that somehow rock and roll is inherently satanic. And if you look at the history of popular music, you'll find that most all styles of music that were popular had to go through sort of that phase where when they're new, they're seen as being both inferior and somehow evil. It was true of jazz. It was true of ragtime. If you go back far enough, you can find people criticizing William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, for his sort of band marching music approach to doing Christian music. And you can go back and find various hymn writers being condemned for adopting the popular musical styles of their day. And I think if you go back and look at the issue historically, you'll find that virtually every musical genre meets these same sorts of accusations from the generation that preceded them, that didn't grow up and wasn't familiar with this sort of music. So it's a charge that's been around a long time. It isn't unique to using rock in conjunction with Christian music.
Yeah, I'm going to thank the caller for his call. That was a really good thing to bring up. In terms of the church, I would imagine there are some denominations, or there are folks within denominations that say we shouldn't be borrowing from the secular world. We shouldn't be borrowing rock and roll. The medium is the message, they might say, rather than the folks who would say, well, the medium is not the message. What we're doing here is bringing you a message, and we're this is just the way we get it to you. It's a delivery system.
And the delivery system argument is sort of the separational argument, is that we can take any form of popular music, be it heavy metal or ska or punk or an alternative or a thrash style of music, and add Christian lyrics to it and use it as a tool to convert the masses or to encourage the faithful. You get a little more of a critical view of that with the artistic subgenre, who criticizes that so often separational groups, at least when they start out, sort of sound like, you know, this is the Christianized version of whatever band happens to be popular at the moment, and aren't producing what the artists see as authentic, honest music, but instead are co-opting a musical style for a very utilitarian sort of purpose. Now, the bands that would see themselves as artists, they don't have a ready one-to-one correspondence in the pop realm. They tend to produce a musical style within the art genre, of course, that's uniquely their own. You can't say, you know, this is the Christian version of Marilyn Manson or whatever else with the artists, but with the separational ministers, you can almost make that charge. You can find that they sound an awful lot like some mainstream pop artist rather than having a developed style that's unique to them as an individual or a band.
Yeah. Our time is rapidly drawing down, and I want to play another piece of music here so that folks in the audience who are unfamiliar with contemporary Christian music and these subgenres within the genre will be able to have a better handle on what we're talking about. And why don't we go ahead and move right to what you refer to as transformational contemporary Christian music, an artist by the name of Mark Hurd. We're going to hear Orphans of God, but before we do, why don't you talk with us about Mark Hurd and his view of contemporary Christian music.
Okay, Mark Hurd died a few years ago at a very young age of a heart attack. He had a history of heart disease in his family and actually had a heart attack while performing on stage at a major CCM festival, finished the show, played for another, I don't know, 45 minutes or so, and went to the hospital that night and slipped into a coma a few days later and never pulled out of it. But Mark Hurd is one of those artistic performers who puts a lot of stress on honesty in music. And rather than sort of candy-coating, I became a Christian, now everything is perfect and everything always works out right for me, struggles with the reality of living in a broken, fallen world, in a world where things aren't perfect, where, as in another one of Heard's songs, he sings about the pain that plagues creation, that creation is groaning for a restoration. And Christians aren't immune from those sorts of struggles, in Heard's view, that they experience the same trials, the same struggles, the same sort of pains as non-Christians do, that the rain falls on the just and the unjust, as the Bible says and Heard would readily quote, that it's that sort of honest recognition of struggle that sort of defines the artistic subgenre known as transformational CCM.
Okay, here's Mark Heard, Orphans of God, from the album High Noon. Mark Heard, Orphans of God, from the recording High Noon. Jay, we've got to wrap it up here, but before we go, I want to ask you a question that I think is really an interesting one. You've said that CCM, contemporary Christian music, is having an impact on the nature of worship. And I would like you to just talk with us for a minute about how CCM is impacting the nature of worship.
You're asking a college professor to answer a question in 1 minute. Once we get started, it takes us 75 minutes to say anything. But I'll try, Celeste. In a nutshell, the nature of worship has been shifting in many churches across the United States from a musical style that is based on traditional hymns with organ and piano to a musical style that features what are called worship choruses, using sort of a soft rock, pop, folk style of music that connects more with people today, a music that seems to speak to them. And recent surveys have shown that over 50% of the churches are now using at least some or preponderantly a majority of these sort of worship choruses and moving away from more traditional hymns. And then there are a number of debates about whether or not that's good or bad, and some of that depends upon how old you are and which sort of denominational background you come from.
Well, interesting. Really a fascinating hour here we've had together. I want to thank you very much for talking with us. I wish we had more time.
Oh, I do too, Celeste. It was great fun, and your callers asked some very good questions. It was very enjoyable.
Our guest this afternoon, Jay Howard, together with John Streck. He is the author of Apostles of Rock, The Splintered World of Contemporary Christian Music. And our guest, Jay Howard, is an associate professor of sociology at Indiana University, Purdue University, Columbus.